It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Today, Politico is announcing a year-long editorial series that is showcasing innovative ideas from cities across the nation and how they can be re-engineered. The first city is Pittsburgh, and I'm joined now by phone by Susan Glasser, editor-in-chief for Politico magazine. She joins us by phone. Susan Glasser, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you for having me.
How did Pittsburgh end up being the city that leads off this series?
We're delighted to be kicking off our year-long What Works project with Pittsburgh. As it happens, one of my colleagues at Politico magazine is a native of Pittsburgh, and when we were sifting through ideas and debating what would be a good lead-off city, he made a very compelling case for Pittsburgh. I think the article by Glenn Thresh more than proves the case, and it's a fascinating case study for people, I think, at a time when Detroit's troubles, for example, occupy so much space in the national news. Pittsburgh offers such an interesting and engaging counterpoint to this narrative of Rust Belt decline and decay that we were delighted to launch our series with a real examination of what you guys are doing right there.
And unfortunately, Glenn Thresh, who wrote the piece, was not available to be a part of this conversation, but he asks in his story, is a recipe for urban reinvention, proof that Silicon Valleys can flourish anywhere as a million city managers the world over dream, is Pittsburgh, in fact, a recipe for urban reinvention? And it seems that, in fact, Pittsburgh is an integral part of that recipe.
Well, you know, I think the reason that's a question in the story, right, and not a definitive and hard and fast answer is because Glenn's piece walks through some of the many advantages, both man-made and natural, that Pittsburgh has. And, you know, one real question, of course, is how much does innovation exist or reinvention of a city exist in a checklist way? Every city in the country, if not the world, has aspirations to create their own tech district, for example. You know, their mini Silicon Valley, their Silicon Alley, and only few as you know, succeed at that enterprise. Obviously, Pittsburgh is one that is succeeding with creating a real tech and innovation-led part of its economy, but it had this great infrastructure of well-funded universities, courtesy of your 19th-century robber barons. Geography, as Glenn argues in the piece, is a great natural advantage in terms of containing sprawl in Pittsburgh in a way that, say, Detroit didn't have that opportunity. So, you know, I think that's part of why we launched the series and we're looking to do reporting in places all over the country. We all know we're living right now in a time of real urban renewal in the United States. There's been a mass shift in preferences. Young people really want to live in cities. You know, the new tech economy and the sort of end of an industrial era model of work means there's a lot more flexibility and a new geography, basically, that's coming into play. At the same time, you know, that brings up a host of other challenges. What's happening with the skyrocketing poverty in suburbs now as a result, in some ways, of the gentrification of cities? So I think Pittsburgh, as well as other cities, provides such an interesting laboratory to talk about what works and what doesn't work, by the way.
Pittsburgh is referred to in a famous Wall Street Journal piece as Roboburg, and one of the questions Glenn asks in his piece is, why did Pittsburgh make it when so many other industrial-era powerhouses have not? Why, in short, is it Roboburg today and not Detroit?
What I was struck by was how that Roboburg phrase came from the Wall Street Journal, which gave it that label more than a decade ago. Arguably, according to the reporting in this piece, it was really not necessarily true at that time, more aspirational than reality. And I think that suggests, A, what a long, tough slog it is to really turn something around, B, that marketing is not a sufficient predicate to really changing the structure of an economy, the structure of a city. So it's great to have a clever catchphrase, but it may or may not mean that it's going to turn into reality. If marketing was Detroit's problem, I'm sure it would be a lot easier for them to solve it. So I think that's just a great example to me of just how very long this transformation has been underway. And we look at the central characters in the piece are, you know, the geniuses of the Carnegie Mellon Robotics Institute and, you know, really a critical intellectual infrastructure that the city has been building for decades.
There's also an irony that is pointed out in your story, and that is that a city built on an industrial working class has reclaimed part of its past industrial glory by developing machines designed, in some cases, to replace human workers. But there's a debate here, and one of the central characters in the piece, Red Whitaker, who is an expert in robotics at CMU, talks about how, as far as he's concerned, the robots aren't necessarily taking away jobs. They're actually creating them. Talk about how robotics, in Pittsburgh's case, has helped revitalize the city.
Well, that's right. I mean, there's a big national debate, and this is an interesting case study of it. Is increasing automation of the U.S. economy in the long term undermining the basis of jobs, or is it creating a new foundation for a different kind of jobs? Red Whitaker, as you pointed out, is a very colorful character at the center of this piece that we did today in Politico magazine, and he has an adamant answer to this. He says, heck no, unless you really are a human who wants to crawl around in a sewer pipe, I'm not taking away your job by inventing robots to do these functions that humans can't or won't do in the coming decades. He makes a pretty compelling case that a lot of the robots that we looked at are quintessential industrial robots performing functions that really, in some cases, are just even unsafe for humans to undertake. There's a robot snake, for example, that can get into places that certainly you and I can't go. And there's a very compelling case that it's automating the kinds of jobs that Americans don't really want to do anymore anyway. So, you know, but the irony is not really lost on anybody that, you know, these are jobs in many cases that humans have been doing. Is the new industrial age that America is embarking on. This is kind of the future of manufacturing, but it's the future of manufacturing with a lot less humans involved in the plant. So I guess that goes right back to what's going to be a theme later on in this series that we're doing for the whole year, which is education. So great, it's fine to have robots that we're inventing to take basically manual labor away from humans, but are we educating and creating enough new citizens who can undertake the information age jobs of inventing still more robots and that sort of thing? So I think you're going to see a lot of conversation around that over the next few years as policymakers here in Washington try to figure out the implications of the robot age.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with Susan Glasser. She's editor-in-chief of Politico magazine, which has embarked on an ambitious year-long editorial series showcasing innovative ideas from cities across the nation, Pittsburgh being one of them. In fact, Pittsburgh is the city that leads off the series, which debuts today, in fact. And we're talking about a piece that Glenn Thrush, the senior writer who talks about Pittsburgh in his story, has put together. And in that story, Susan, he refers to Richard Florida, who, of course, is the author of The Rise of the Creative Class. And one of the things that he references in the piece is how Florida gave Pittsburgh institutions high marks for investing in technology and economic development. And the robber barons, as you referred to earlier, the Carnegies, the Mellons, the Fricks have always funneled money into education and in fact, built the Carnegie Tech, now known as CMU, which Red Whitaker, of course, is a big part of. And he talks about how Florida says that Pittsburgh was slow to realize the powerful magnet of cultural factors and the need to cultivate a cool image. So in order to pull all of the ingredients together and create this formula for success, was a big part of it what we're seeing recently, where Pittsburgh has somehow become this city that, in addition to being technologically innovative, is also perceived as cool?
You know, I'm so glad you brought up this question of the cool factor. We were debating this last night as we were putting the final touches on not only Glenn's piece, but a really terrific set of photo essays by a photographer, a wonderful photographer who's going to shoot the whole series for us in cities all across the country. And we're talking about why is it that, you know, sort of the new geek chic, if you will, has seemed to become a part of this technology-led redevelopment, not just in Pittsburgh, but in other places, you know, do you have to, like, create a mini Brooklyn in order to attract wannabe hipster coders? I don't think so in the long term. And there's a lot of people who pretty aggressively pushed back against Richard Florida, who came up with this notion of the creative class and a new kind of urban environment being a prerequisite for this kind of long-term economic growth. There's a lot of people who may quibble with aspects of it, but clearly what we're seeing is a macro shift across the country, not just in Pittsburgh, but in across the country. We're seeing young people vote with their feet. They don't want to live in the kind of suburban environment that they grew up in. They don't want to be chained to their cars and long commutes. Even in the original Silicon Valley, what you're actually seeing is a mass exodus into San Francisco, and the tech companies are following their constituents, you know, those wannabe coders, back into the city, and that's one of the big economic stories in California this year. And so I think, you know, call it cool or not, but clearly, if you want to succeed in the new economy as a company, you do need to satisfy a pretty widespread longing among American millennials for a different physical environment.
Then, of course, comes the question about how to disseminate the wealth, to share or allow for opportunities for everybody to share in the prosperity, as once occurred in this city with the steel industry. You know, how do you disseminate the new prosperity to all of the residents and not just the high-tech guys? And you quote our new mayor, Bill Peduto, asking that question, in fact, in your piece. So what do we find out in this story about how Pittsburgh can do that?
I think, to me, that is actually the biggest unresolved question that the story sort of leaves hanging out there. I think it's fascinating that your new mayor was elected in part on a program of basically addressing the unequal and uneven benefits of the city's reinvention. That's very resonant at a time when you have the new mayor of New York, also Bill de Blasio, talking about two Americas, when you have here in Washington both political parties talking about this question of the very uneven distribution of wealth, the recovery from the recession, which has been wildly and disproportionately only a recovery of the 1%, if you will, in the United States, and the middle class is vanishing. And so I think there's no answers to that in the story that we put out today, but clearly that's probably the number one question on the national political agenda in 2014 in a national election year.
And it's interesting because one of the sources in the story who wasn't identified, a CMU official who predicted that Pittsburgh, which is really trying to, thanks to CMU, trying to push to pioneer driverless cars, that Pittsburgh is, that ultimately somebody else is going to take this over. What about this particular aspect of the story?
You know, I think that's a good question. You have, Pittsburgh, the city, has benefited over the last few years as some of the big Silicon Valley innovators have come in looking to hire up their piece of the Pittsburgh action. You have a big Google office there now, lots of the other big companies partnering with Pittsburgh institutions or employing people there. Does Pittsburgh have the scale of capital and the ability to finance wildly ambitious new projects, I think, is one of the questions raised by Glenn's article. It's a good question. The Carnegie Mellon Group was an original pioneer of driverless cars, and then Google came in basically with loads of money as well as engineering talent and has made what appears to be a leap ahead. Obviously, it's not just Pittsburgh and Carnegie Mellon, but all the major car companies in the world who are now sort of scrambling to keep up with Google in that race for a driverless car that works and that could be adopted in some widespread way. It's a good question. You know, without those robber baron level of support for this new economy, will Pittsburgh, you know, sort of chug along, or do you have the resources and the big time capital to vault into a different league? I don't know. It's a good question.
We're talking with Susan Glasser. She's editor and chief of Politico magazine, and we're talking about the year long editorial series showcasing innovative ideas from cities across the nation. And the leadoff city is Pittsburgh, which I think a lot of people, knowing how prideful people are in this town, will be very excited about. What does Politico want to accomplish with this series? And what are some of the other cities you'll be visiting?
That's a good question. I think our goal was really both to get outside of Washington at a time of what everybody knows is massive political gridlock and dysfunction. What we were looking to do was to say, you know, the world hasn't stopped just because Washington is having a hard time getting anything done. And, you know, American cities are the laboratories and the landscape in which American politics are played out. And so, of course, it's a great extension and a part of our mandate as a news organization. And if you look, though, there's very little on-the-ground reporting. One of the things that's happened over the last decade is really sort of the decline and the collapse of national, ambitious national reporting. And there are only very few outlets who are doing these kinds of stories now at a time when major transformations are occurring. And that's the other big macro trend that's happening in American politics is a dramatic shift in preference and structure and location of where Americans live and where Americans, especially of a new generation, where they want to live. They want to live in cities. More Americans now live in cities, are moving into cities than into suburbs for the first time since the 1920s. Well, what does that mean on the ground? Not all cities are created equal, even at a time when there's a big preference. Why are some places Detroit and some places Pittsburgh? What about how ideas spread and innovation spread across these different places? We have our bike share, very popular bike share program here in Washington, D.C. Obviously, New York just got it and thought they invented it. You know, how do ideas like that leapfrog where it actually started was in Paris, for example. So that's a story that we may look at later this year. What about education innovations? And, you know, what happens when a smart program in Kalamazoo has 20 other school districts around the country interested in immediately adopting it? So those are the kinds of subjects we'll be looking at in this series.
We've been talking with Susan Glasser, editor-in-chief of Politico magazine, joining us from Washington, D.C. to talk about the year-long editorial series showcasing innovative ideas from cities across the nation, including Pittsburgh. Their piece on Pittsburgh can be found starting today at their website. And Susan Glasser, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Essential Pittsburgh.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm delighted to talk to you about Pittsburgh today.
And more Essential Pittsburgh coming up on 90.5 WESA.